So the season of Lent began 10 days ago, and if you're new to our church or new to just church in general and you don't even know what Lent is, Lent is the 40 days leading up to Good Friday and Easter Sunday. And so we've been observing it and celebrating it, and we're doing a number of things together as a church, and you need to grab one of these bookmarks on the way out, and it'll tell you a little bit about what Lent's all about and what we're doing as a church. But one of the things we're doing is we're reading the story of Exodus together, and it's an amazing story, and we said this at the very beginning. We said there's a few things that we're going to ask throughout this season and throughout this story as we read it together. One of the things is, what's your Egypt? So is there anything in your life that you feel burdened by or almost enslaved by that you want to be sort of freed from? Do you have an Egypt? Or maybe what's your wilderness? Is there any part of your life where you feel lost or sort of lonely right now? Or maybe it's, what's your promised land? What are you hoping for? What are you longing for in your life? But there's one specific question that we're asking each week, and Ian, who led worship for us, mentioned it a few minutes ago. And the question for today is, what are you doubting? Is there an area of your life that you're doubting? Yourself, maybe, right now. I don't mean necessarily big philosophical doubts, like I doubt God's existence. I mean, that's important, and there's a place to talk about that, but maybe more personal doubts, something going on specifically in your life, and maybe it's something really hard, and you're doubting whether you can actually make your way through it. Like, will I ever get through this? Or maybe it's something you feel like God is asking you to do, or someone's asking you to do, and you're not sure you're able to do it. I know I'm supposed to forgive this person, but I just don't know if I can. I'm not sure if I'm able to. Or maybe it's something that you're not sure you're able to get through. You're realizing some things about yourself or some things in your life. Maybe you're coming to the conclusion, I'm an alcoholic or I'm a workaholic. But I don't know if that'll ever change. I don't know if I can ever see that change. Or maybe it's a specific situation. There's a challenge you're facing at home, or it's in your marriage, or with kids, or with your family, or at school. And you keep thinking, like, I just don't know. I mean, I feel like there's some work to be done here, and I feel like God's saying, just hang in there and persevere and do the hard work. But I don't know how much longer I can hang in there. I just don't know if I can keep doing this. Where do you have doubts right now? Where do you doubt yourself or what's actually going on in your life? I love the story of Moses, because Moses is the guy who's eventually going to rescue and deliver and lead the entire people of Israel out of Egypt. But his story starts with a whole lot of doubt. We were introduced to Moses last week. You remember he was saved as a baby. He was rescued and delivered, and there's this miraculous story about him as a baby. And then the book of Exodus actually skips forward many, many years, and he's 40 years old. He's all grown up, and he realizes at this point in his life, he realizes that he's an Israelite by birth, even though he was adopted by Egyptians. He was actually adopted by Pharaoh's daughter, and he grew up in that family. But he begins to identify more with the Israelites. He sees how they're being oppressed and how they're being mistreated, and he feels like he needs to do something about it. And one day, he sees an Egyptian taskmaster abusing or mistreating a Hebrew servant or slave. And so he jumps in, and he actually kills the Egyptian taskmaster, murders him in cold blood, and then tries to hide the body so no one will find out. But people do find out. And Pharaoh finds out. And so Moses, afraid for his life, runs into the wilderness. And he's there for many years, and while he's in the wilderness, the desert, he meets a man and his daughters, and actually one day he saves the daughters of this man from some people who are mistreating them. And we see from a couple of stories about Moses' life, there's even another story told, we see a couple of things about his personality early on. One, he's really impulsive. He just sort of jumps in and acts before he even thinks about what he's doing. And then the other is, he has this bent towards helping and rescuing people. When people are being taken advantage of or being mistreated, he just wants to jump in and do something about it and make things that are wrong right. So he's really impulsive, and he has this rescuer mentality. So basically, Moses is Dan Snyder, let's be honest, right? I mean, he's Dan Snyder. He's really impulsive in a good way, and he wants to rescue and help people out. That's Moses. But he's stuck in the wilderness. He's stuck in the wilderness. And he gets married, and he has some kids, and he becomes a shepherd for decades in the desert. And then we're told that this happens one day. Exodus chapter 3, verse 1. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness, and they came to Horeb, which is another name given to the same mountain that's called Sinai. It's the same mountain in the Bible. Horeb or Sinai, the mountain of God. And there the angel of the Lord, or it could be the angel who is the Lord, appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. And Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So this is the famous burning bush experience that Moses has. He's there in the desert, and he sees this bush, and it's on fire sort of miraculously, but it's not burning up. And we don't know how this is happening, if it's a supernatural thing that's happening, or maybe the way the sun is reflecting on it that day, it does something, and he doesn't understand. But he hears this voice, and at first he thinks maybe it's a messenger or an angel from God, but then he's going to eventually realize it's not that. It's actually God himself speaking to him. And this is what God says, verse 6. I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, and the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And at this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. And the Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I've heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I'm concerned about their suffering. And so I've come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of the land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And so now, go. I am sending you, Moses, to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. Now remember, Moses had seen the Israelites and their experience in Egypt growing up. He saw how they were being abused. He saw how they were being oppressed and mistreated. And he even knew that they needed to be rescued. And at one time, he had jumped in and tried to do something about it. If anyone could be somebody that would go back and potentially be a rescuer or a deliverer for the people, it would be Moses, right? I mean, he knew Egyptian culture. He had grown up in Pharaoh's household, maybe more, better than any other Israelite. He understood Egyptian politics and maybe the resources, the military resources that were available in Egypt at the time. He had the experience. He had the background. He had this personality. He has the character. He's been in the wilderness for 40 years. He's had plenty of time to think about this. So you would think that when God says, I've heard their cries and I'm going to deliver the people and you're going to be the guy, you would think Moses would jump at the opportunity to be a part of this. But on this occasion, Moses isn't impulsive. He doesn't jump. And that righteous energy that we'll see Moses have in future times and on future occasions, we don't see that here. He's not full of it. He's full of a whole lot of doubt. And in fact, what happens is Moses has this long conversation with God where Moses tries to talk God out of the job that he's been given in ways that we often try to do in our own lives. Look at what Moses first says to God. Verse 11. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? In other words, I don't think I've got what this takes. I'm no rescuer. I'm no deliverer. I'm no savior. I'm just a shepherd. Have you ever felt this way? When it seems like God is nudging you to do something, and you're not sure if it's God or it's the universe, or you don't even know what it is, but it feels like you're being pushed in a direction to try something or to do something or to take a risk, and your first response is, I can't do this. I don't have what it takes. You've picked the wrong person. I'm not strong enough. I'm not bold enough. I'm not outgoing enough. I'm not faithful enough. Like, I just don't know enough. I'm not whatever enough. Maybe that's your first response. That's what Moses is saying here. Who am I? Who am I to go back to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And I love God's response. This is what he says, verse 12. And God said, we have some Hebrew here, Eye Emach, So you're going to say that with me, all right? Let's say it all together. E-A-E-M-A-C-H. Oh, you did the ch. That was good. Didn't even sound like Gentiles. Sounded really good. That means, in Hebrew, I am, that's A-A, that's the verb there, I am with you, or I will be with you. There's this tense in Hebrew, it can be present or future, either one. It probably has a future direction. What God is probably saying here is, I will be with you, and this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God right here on this mountain. Now, I love this response because God doesn't even answer Moses' question. You remember what Moses' question was? Who am I, right? Because Moses is basically saying, I'm not sure I've got what it takes to do what you're asking me to do. And God could have said, right, you know, are you kidding me? You're the perfect deliverer. Like, I've been preparing you for this all your life. Look at where you were born. Look at how you were raised. Look at your personality. Look at your experience. You've been in the desert the last 40 years shepherding sheep. And here's a little preview. You're going to be in the desert 40 more, shepherding another group of sheep. You couldn't be more perfect for this role, God could have said. But he doesn't say that at all. That's not how he answers him. Because this isn't about Moses. The people's rescue isn't going to be accomplished by Moses. What's about to happen isn't going to ride on Moses' shoulders and on Moses' abilities and Moses' talent and Moses' leadership. All God can say to Moses is basically, it's not about you, it's about me. And don't worry, Eye Emach, I will be with you. This isn't about you, this is about me and what I'm about to do. And I will be with you. So let me pause right there. What if the thing that you're afraid of or you're doubting in your life right now, what if the thing that you're not sure you can do or you're not sure you can get through, God would say to you this morning, it's not about you. This is about what I'm going to do. And you know who you are? You're somebody who has God with you in this and through this. That's what God says to Moses, but Moses has more questions. Next verse, verse 13. Moses said to God, well, suppose I go to the Israelites and I say to them, the God of your fathers, you know, our God that our ancestors worshiped, has sent me to you, and they ask me, well, what is his name? What shall I tell them? What do I tell them your name is? God? We're not even sure what to call you. And remember, in that culture, names are really important. Names often signified or revealed or described something about somebody. So essentially what Moses is saying is, what's your name and who are you really? And what are you actually like? Verse 14, God said to Moses, more Hebrew, Eye Asher Eye. Let's say that together. Eye Asher Eye. Same verb there. You notice that same word, Eye, means I am who I am. Or again, it could have a more future orientation, which is probably what God is saying. I will be what I will be. And so this is what you're to say to the Israelites. Eye, I am, or I will be, has sent me to you. Wait a second. That's your name, God? What in the blazing glory? Does that, literally, he's in front of a burning bush, right? What? Right, right? What does that mean? Like, I don't even know how to describe, like, what? How do I tell people that? I mean, couldn't you have just said, my name is Bob, right? That would have been so much easier, God. Can't we just call you something really simple? What I am or I will be? What does that mean? Now, some people think when God says this here to Moses, He's talking about his eternal existence. That God is making a definitive statement about who he is within himself. And he's saying, I exist apart from everything else. I just exist because that's who I am. And I'm the ground of all existence. And I'm the ground of all being. And I think that's true. I think that's a picture that the rest of the Bible portrays about God, that everything else that exists is somehow grounded in his existence and his being. But that's probably how Plato would have thought about this, or Aristotle would have thought about this, or maybe even Oprah would have thought about this, right? I mean, that's how they would have read into this. That's probably not what the ancient Israelites thought. That's probably not how God would have revealed himself to a shepherd wandering in the desert, or to a group of people who are being oppressed as slaves in Egypt. I mean, can you imagine him showing up and saying, well, I am the very ground of ontological being. And the people would say, like, well, that's great if you're an upper-class educated philosopher in Greece like Plato, but what is that going to do for us? Have you seen our slavery? Have you seen the bricks we have to make? Have you seen our slums and our shanty town? Have you seen the way we live? How we've lived for decades and centuries? How we're slaves and we're oppressed? What are you going to do about that, God? And you see, I think God is saying in his name here, yeah, I know. And I'm with you. And I'm going to do something about it. And I am in this with you. I am present to you. And I will be, that's what he had said to Moses, Eye Imach, I will be with you. I see what's going on. Don't worry. I'm going to be what you need me to be in the midst of this. In fact, just to clear it up, because maybe this is still confusing to Moses, God says in the next verse, God also said to Moses, say to the Israelites, Yahweh, which is the same verb, it's just slightly different. It's actually the third person form of this verb. So the first person would be, I am, or I will be, and maybe God thinks, okay, if I told them that's what my name is, they're going to go around calling me I am, or I will be. But whenever they say that, people are going to think they're talking about themselves and not actually me, so maybe that'll be confusing. So maybe I'll have them refer to me in the third person, so it'll always be clear they're talking about me. So don't call me Eye, call me Yahweh. Which is he is, or he will be. And then there's a slight change to it. It's this strange Hebrew thing where it goes into a different verb stem, which means there's a causative element to it. So it doesn't just mean I am or I will be. It means I will cause to be. I will cause things to happen. That's what Yahweh means. So say to the Israelites, Yahweh, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. And this is my name forever. The name that you shall call me from generation to generation. Whenever you use this name, God is saying, you'll remember that in this moment, I was with you. I heard you, and I was present. And I said that I would cause things to happen, and I would cause to be for you what you needed in this moment. And I would do something that you could never imagine, so that generations will continue to look back at this defining moment in the history of your people. And remember, that's the kind of God I am. I'm the God who's with you and for you, acting on your behalf. Moving behind the scenes, whether you see it or not, causing things to happen. Now, this is the name that appears throughout the rest of the Old Testament, that the Hebrew people began calling God, Yahweh. In fact, it appears three times more than any other name in the entire Old Testament. But down the road, Jews would become fearful of misusing the name. One of the commandments that's given to them is don't use God's name in vain. They became fearful of that, so they stopped actually saying the word Yahweh. When they would read scripture, they would insert a different Hebrew word, one that was either Hashem, which means the name, or Adonai, which means Lord. And then later Christian translators followed the same practice. And so every time Yahweh shows up in Hebrew in the Old Testament, they put the word the Lord in there in all capitals. But it's not actually the word the Lord. That's a title. That refers to what God does, but that's not who God is. It's this idea that he is Yahweh. And he's always with us. And he will be for us what we need. And Yahweh actually keeps talking to Moses at this point. He starts to give Moses all kinds of instructions about what he's actually going to do on their behalf. And it's long, so we won't read it. I'll just summarize it for you. But God basically says, here's what you're going to do, Moses. You're going to go back and you're going to gather all the elders and all the leaders of Israel. And you're going to tell them about me and that I sent you. And here's what's going to happen. And trust me, they will listen to you and they will believe everything that I say. And then you're going to go to Pharaoh and you're going to tell Pharaoh about me. And you're going to say that me and my people want to go out into the wilderness to worship and serve Yahweh. We don't want to worship and serve you anymore, Pharaoh. Pharaoh's not going to be very happy about that. But I'm going to do some amazing things to change Pharaoh's mind. And eventually he will send you off. And then here's the best part about it, Moses. When he sends you off, the people in Egypt are going to be so excited to see you go. They're going to want you to leave, that they're going to be kind to you, and they're going to give you money and clothing and treasure and possessions as you leave. You're going to leave Egypt. It's going to be amazing. To which Moses replies, chapter 4, verse 1. Moses answered, well, what if they do not believe me or listen to me, and they say, Yahweh did not appear to you? Moses, I just said they were going to listen to you. Were you not listening to me? Like, I just told you that they're going to listen to you, and I'm speaking from a burning bush right now, and you're listening, so don't you think I can make sure they'll listen as well? But that's not what God says. In fact, God's really patient with Moses. He says, okay, let's pretend they don't listen to you. Let me give you a few tricks that you can do when you get back there. Here's one trick. Take the staff, throw it on the ground. Moses does it. It turns into a snake, and God's like, that's really cool. Just do that in front of them. They'll definitely listen to you. And if they don't believe that, they will, but if they don't believe that, take your hand and put it in your coat and pull it out. Moses pulls it out and it's like full of disease and he's like, oh, that's terrible. And God says, put it back in. He pulls it out and it's totally clean. And God says, just do that trick in front of them and they will totally believe you. And if they don't after the second trick, here's a third one. You'll be able to turn the entire Nile River into blood. The very thing that all the Egyptians worship, you'll turn into blood. You can do that. Trust me. They will listen to you, and they will believe what you say. To which Moses replies, verse 10. Moses said to Yahweh, pardon your servant, Lord. I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I'm slow of speech and tongue. So this isn't even a question anymore. It's just a statement. Basically, Moses is saying, I can't do this. I don't know if you noticed, Yahweh, but I'm not very good at speaking. I sort of stutter and stammer sometimes, and I can't always get my words out, and I don't like being in front of people and talking in front of people. I'm introverted. I'm an INTJ. You know that, God. And I've been in the wilderness for 40 years, so I really don't want to be in front of people. And when I do talk, it never comes out right. I can't do this. And God is patient. Look at what he says, verse 11. Yahweh said to him, who gave human beings their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? In other words, I'm in control, Moses. Is it not I, Yahweh? Now go. I will help you speak and will teach you what to say. And look at how Moses responds, verse 13. After a moment of silent reflection,
Moses said to Yahweh, I am sorry I doubted myself for you, Yahweh. I was afraid of failure, and I did not trust you with the outcome. But now I will be strong and courageous and trust that your power will be demonstrated in my shortcomings and weakness. Wow. If Moses had actually said that, that would have been amazing. But that's not what he said. Look at what he says. Verse 13, but Moses said, pardon your servant, Lord. Please send someone else. And you can imagine it's in a whiny voice. Please just send somebody else. God is patient. In fact, the rest of the book of Exodus will show God is patient. And the whole entire Old Testament will show God is incredibly patient with his people. But he's not infinitely patient. And the rest of the story says that God gets pretty frustrated and pretty angry with Moses at this point. In fact, it literally says God's nostrils became inflamed, which is this Hebrew idiom that's really cool, and it's always in the Old Testament just translated someone's anger burned, but whenever you see those words in an English translation that someone's anger burned, it's literally the Hebrew idiom, their nostrils became inflamed. So next time you get really upset, just say, my nostrils are becoming inflamed, right? But that's what happens with God. He can't believe that Moses isn't getting this. Excuse after excuse. And God keeps telling him, I'm in control of all that. I just said, I'll be with you. That's my name. That's who I am. That's what I do. Like, I'm going to be there. I'm going to give you speech. Finally, God just looks at Moses, and he basically says this. Just get out of here. Like, just go. Fine, you don't think you can speak? I'll send your brother Aaron with you. He'll do all the talking. Get going. And Moses turns around, kind of kicks a rock, and the reluctant Savior heads back to Egypt. So here's the question for us. Why does Moses doubt? I think he doubts because he sees his weakness as a limitation. He thinks he can't really do what God has asked him to do. And maybe he thinks he has a bad reputation in Egypt. Maybe he thinks that he tried this once and it didn't work out very well. Maybe he thinks Pharaoh's still going to be after him and try to kill him when he goes back. Maybe he thinks, I'm not a great political leader. I'm not a very good military leader. I'm not very strong. I'm old, right? I'm not cut out for this. He thinks the Israelite leaders are never going to listen to him. He thinks he's not a very good speaker. He thinks all the words are just going to get jumbled up when he tries to cast vision for what God is trying to do. He thinks that this is never going to work. But God doesn't seem to care. Because this isn't about Moses and what Moses is going to do. This is about God and what God's going to do. In fact, look at the first two questions that Moses asks. I think these are helpful questions. Who am I? Remember what God says? I will be with you. That's who you are. You're the guy whom God will be with. That's who you are. Well, who are you then? That's Moses' next question. Well, I will be what I will be. And that just means I'm going to be with you, and I'm going to be what you need in the midst of this. And eventually, because I gave you all the details, that's going to mean your people are going to be delivered. I'm going to do something that's going to change the trajectory of your people's lives forever. And you see, I think these are the two questions we should ask in any moment of self-doubt. When you're facing something difficult or you're seeing something that you don't think you can do or you don't think you can finish or you don't think you can face, maybe you just need to start by saying, who am I? Who am I, God? And if you pause long enough to listen, maybe God will whisper to you, you're my son. You're my daughter. You're my light and my love. You're made in my image. And he could go on and on and on. But maybe he won't say any of those things. Maybe he'll just look at you and say, you know who you are? you're somebody that I am with. You're somebody who has God on their side, who has God in their corner, who can face anything because God is with them. To which we might say, well, who are you, God? And I think he'd say the same thing. I'm Yahweh, and I'll be with you. I'll be with you in your Egypt. I'll be with you in your wilderness. I'll help you and be with you in whatever you face, and I will be whatever you need in the midst of that. Maybe not what you want, because what you want is the quickest road out of Egypt, and what you want is the easy solution or the easy fix to get out of the wilderness as fast as possible. And that's normal, and that's natural, and that's what we all want, but sometimes that's not what's best. And so God doesn't always give us, or he doesn't always be what we want, but he is what we need. He's Yahweh. I will be what I will be. And if we could hear those answers to the questions we have when we face our doubts, I don't think they would remove our doubts, but I think it would give us the courage to face our doubts and say, all right, I'm going to choose to trust you in the midst of this. But Moses couldn't do that. God gives him all sorts of instructions, but Moses keeps going. He has three more things. He basically says, well, what if they don't believe me, right? But I'm a terrible speaker. Please just send someone else. You see, Moses still doubts that God will do what he says he would do, and that God can be to him what he says he would be. And I think we still do that. I think we're the same way. I think my tendency sometimes is to say, you know what? God can help other people forgive, but not me. I mean, God, if you saw what she did to me or you saw what he did, you would know why I just can't forgive. God may help other people deal with their marriage issues or their crises or might help other people face things or give other people boldness, but it's not going to happen in my life. He doesn't do that for me. I just can't face this. And just like Moses, I think we see our weakness as a limitation. But that's not how God works. God's power isn't limited by our weakness. God's power is actually magnified in our weakness. God is an expert at taking people who are weak and magnifying his power and his strength. You know what God doesn't want to happen here? He doesn't want the people of Egypt to say, man, look at what Moses is doing. He is an amazing leader. And the reason that we're leaving Egypt and the reason we're getting out of slavery and the reason all this is happening is because of how awesome Moses is. Here's what God wants to happen. He wants the people to look at Moses and say, that's the guy that's going to lead us? Are you kidding me? Like, that's who you pick? He is horrible leader. He's afraid. He fled from Israel, or fled from Egypt years ago. He doesn't know what to do. He can't speak. He jumbles his words. He doesn't know what to say. If our success at leaving Egypt is riding on his shoulders and his leadership style, it's never going to happen. It would take a miracle with that guy for us ever to leave Egypt. Yeah. That's how it's going to go down. That's what's going to happen. And that's why all the nations around, when it does happen, are going to say, wow, did you see what happened there? And they were led by that guy? There's something about that people, and there's something about the God they were. Their God must be way more powerful than Pharaoh and all the other Egyptian gods, or that never would have happened. You see, our weakness, and this is the last statement, and I think it's an important one, our weakness isn't a limitation on God's power. Our weakness is a prerequisite for God's power. So where do you doubt today? Where are you facing? Where you have doubts? You're not sure you can make it or get through it, or you're not sure God will ever do anything or anything will ever change. Maybe you just need to ask Moses' first two questions. Who am I? And who are you, God? And maybe you'll hear this answer. You're somebody who has God on their side. You're somebody who has Yahweh in their corner. And Yahweh is someone who will be with you no matter what you face. And even when we keep complaining, and even when we keep making excuses, and even when we step into the role of Moses, I think God will look at us, even when we might cry out and say, would you just pick somebody else and send somebody else? I think God, with just a little bit of impatience and a whole lot of grace, will say, quit complaining. Let's get going. Trust me on this. You're going to be blown away by what I do. Let me pray. God, we want to trust you in our doubts and the things we face. God, for every one of us in this room, we face things. For those of us in middle school or high school, we face challenges each day. Those in college or in our workplaces or in our neighborhoods or our families. And God, we want to believe that you're with us. Thank you for this story from Exodus. And thank you for revealing that you were ultimately with us when you sent your Son for us. And you gave your Spirit to live within us, to continue to remind us that you're the God who is with us. And so help us as we sing today and as we try to believe today, help us to choose to trust you in the face of all of our doubts. I pray this in your name. Amen.